This recording is a production of Faith Builders Educational Programs. This presentation was recorded at Teachers Week 2019, held at Faith Builders from July 29 through August 2.
Good afternoon. Good to see everybody here. Just curious, how many of you were not in my part one on Tuesday morning? Okay. Very good. So there is a bit of a switchover from the people I had then, which that's great. Welcome, and we'll see what we can learn together today. For those of you who were not in the class on Tuesday morning, I taught school in Honduras for my last 4 years. And my experience with trauma children comes more from living with my sister, who is one of the moms from the children's home. So I am not teaching right now, but instead, I'm helping family, which means traveling between Honduras, Pennsylvania, and New York City. So you'll probably find me one of those places, or else traveling between them. And I really enjoy living with Carol, probably about 6 months out of the year. I live with her and her family. And when you live with trauma children, you definitely see it up close. And so when I studied for these topics at Faith Builders, I already had an interest, but studying deeper helped to put some pieces together for myself. And I learned a lot from the DVDs by Karen Purvis. I felt like that was a very helpful resource. I do not have the web address for that on the handout today, but I do have it on the handout from Tuesday morning. So if you want information, just let me know. Also, in case I run out of time at the end, there are a few books that I recommended for the bookstore. The Connected Child is one that several parents recommended to me when I asked them for good books to read. Lost at School is another one. I enjoy this one because it's written to teachers. And it has a story woven throughout. So it's story and instruction. And I found this one very interesting, enjoyable. This is also a storybook, and this would give you an insight into some of the struggles, despair that foster or adoptive parents can go through. I felt like this was, I could resonate with it because of living with my sister and seeing the stress that it creates parenting trauma children. There's also stories in here that are very positive. So it's despair and hope all in the same book. So that's another one. These three are in the bookstore. And then I have a few others here that I enjoyed and I included. I included the titles and authors in the back of your handout today. So if you're interested, you have the information there. Just a reminder here at the beginning. When I teach of ways to manage children today, I am talking specifically about children harmed by trauma. I'm not trying to get you to go home and change your school's practices, discipline code, whatever. I'm talking about the children who the methods you normally use in your classroom are not working. And you're looking for more tips, more information to try to help these students. So my prayer is that you can take some of the ideas and strategies with you and use them for children in your classroom. Although the world is full of suffering, it is also full of the overcoming of it, written by Helen Keller. And this is what we're talking about today, the overcoming. Brain plasticity. Our brain is a living, growing organ. It has an enormous capacity for change. If somebody sustains a brain injury in an accident, they can, and maybe they lose movement, they can regain some of that through physical therapy. When it comes to learning disabilities or trauma to a child's brain that has changed the brain, the brain is a living, growing organ. There is capacity for change in those areas as well. if your biggest fear is that you've already messed up, or that it's too late, today is the day of hope. It's never too late. There's always hope. Healing can take place. How can we relate to our trauma children in a way that minimizes the bad and encourages the good? Repeated experiences create new connections in the brain. This is a key point. The repeated experiences create new connections. As we give these children good experiences, we rewire their brains. The lesson of the first year of life for a child is, who can I trust? They're learning that they're precious. And we do it so naturally with a baby. You hold a baby and, oh, they're so cute. And they know they're precious, they know they're loved, they know they're wanted, and they live out of that. That becomes their belief system. They're rooted in that sense of their own preciousness. And the lesson of the second year to perhaps the 27th year is, who's the boss? When a child is manipulating, often they haven't learned the lesson of the first year. Once they can trust you, they can let go of control. So our first job is to build trust. When a child comes to you, do they have any reason to trust you? And if they struggle with that trust issue, it's going to take a lot more work to build trust with your student if they have not learned trust. Establish felt safety. Create an atmosphere in your classroom where the child feels safe. Now, why do I say felt safety? What I know is safe and what the child perceives as being safe are not necessarily the same thing. Often they will not be the same thing. Brenda, can you please put your pencil down? If I said that to a trauma child, how would they take it? Kind of abrupt, not real pleasant. I might go home and tell their mom that I was mad at them today. Embarrass them in front of the whole class. And the teacher yelled at me. Because that's what they're hearing. That's how they are interpreting it. Whereas a child who has learned trust, yeah, it might bother them a little bit, but they roll with the punches and they forget it till the next recess. And you may pick up the pins and you read again. So establish felt safety. And how do we do that? Observe your child. There are physical signs whether or not they feel safe. A rigid posture, clenched fists, shallow breathing. Look at their eyes. If the pupils of their eyes are dilated, if they're large, that can be a sign of stress or fear. Now, don't look at my eyes, because my eyes are large all the time, and I don't feel traumatized. I mean, not much. But it was interesting. I'd gone to Joan Moore and I wanted to chat with her about some of my students, and she offered to evaluate me, and that's one thing she said about me, that the pupils of my eyes are so large, they're dilated. So, I don't know. I never thought of that. So look for these things in your students. Can you talk about what makes them afraid? Can you change something in your classroom that will help them to relax? Provide structure. Create a good routine in your classroom that allows the child to know what to expect. If they know what to expect, then they can relax enough to learn. And when I was asking some parents for tips when I was preparing for this breakout, one mom told me routine with a relaxed atmosphere is everything. Very important. If the routine is going to change for part of the day, notify the child in advance. Let them know. Maybe it's a whole school activity. Maybe the whole school is going out to play circle base together. Now, you'll have to know your child. It goes by a lot of different names. King's base? You'll have to know your child. Some of them, if you tell them too far on ahead, they won't be able to study all morning because they're so excited about what's coming. Some of them need a little more warning, so you'll have to know your child. But if you're playing in the afternoon, maybe at lunchtime, pull them aside and say, you know what, we're going to play with the whole school today. And we're going to do it right after story time. And explain a little bit what's going to happen. If you have groups at your school or you have certain teams picked out, and do you know who's going to be on your team? And talk about the people who are going to be on their team, if you know that ahead of time. Just help them to feel comfortable by knowing what is coming next. Provide nurture. Find ways to show the child your love and care for them. They feel like the world is against them. That's their belief system. And we have to work hard to change that. So in working with them, communicate that you are on their side. You're working with them to help them overcome their difficulties. Now this takes a lot of wisdom to provide a good balance of structure and nurture. If you need to up structure, think about upping the nurture as well. Think about your voice tone, body language, and posture. When you talk to the child, they're very observant. Do you have your hands on your hips when you're talking to them? Are you shaking your finger at them, or is your voice too loud? Those are things they're sensitive to. Use simple words and language your child understands. And this goes for academic instruction. Keep it simple, as simple as possible. It goes for correcting the child. When you need to correct a child, talk less, not more, because the child does not have the connections needed to benefit from a 15-minute sermon. So keep it simple and to the point. In the correcting step, you might say something like, the way you talked to Johnny showed no respect. You need to use good words. Notice simple phrases, no respect. We need to use good words. When I was teaching the Down syndrome students, I worked very, very hard on obedience. And my key phrase was obey right away. And I used that when correcting them, when disciplining them. Worked on that, obeying right away. If you have a child who's touching everything, it's not yours. Don't touch it. And use that same phrase, and then after a while they catch themselves. One of the moms down there was babysitting another child, and this little girl had that problem of getting into things that weren't hers, and she was using this phrase on her. And one time she goes to get a cell phone, and then she says, it's not yours, don't touch it. She caught herself, and that's the goal. We want them to catch themselves. Use visuals to go along with it whenever possible. One of my friends had a student who was challenging, and the dad showed this little boy this picture at home. And the dad explained to the boy that his attitude about school was like a flat tire, and he needed to change it. And then he WhatsApped the picture to the teachers, so they had this visual at school, too. And they could work together with the parent, and they could show him this picture at school. Don't just assume. There's so many things that the trauma child should just know. Especially when you compare them with their peers. However, he probably does not just know. And it takes wisdom to meet them where they are and to lead them from that point. Do you know about how much lower functioning trauma children often are than their chronological age? Of course, it varies with children. But they say often they're acting at a level about half their chronological age. And some I get frustrated with a child, I start having, taking their age in half. And some of the behaviors do line up more with that developmental age. Now, they're not that in everything necessarily. Like, they might not be developmentally behind in everything, but keep that in mind when you're working with him. The child won't feel safe if he's expected to perform at a level higher than his capabilities. Remember, we're not gauging by their peers, we're not gauging by their chronological age, not completely anyway. We're taking them from where they are and teaching them, bringing them along step by step. We're gauging what we know from our observation of them. And don't be surprised at anything. It's very easy to be shocked, outraged. It's inconvenient. Why can't you just get with the system? Sometimes the child purposely pushes your buttons to get a negative reaction out of you. Because if they can figure out what buttons to push and they get a reaction, who's in control? They are. And they're desperate to be in control. So practice relating to them calmly and evenly in any situation. Even if you send them to the office, and before you get there to talk to him, he finds a rotary cutter from the girls' craft class drawer and starts slicing sweeper boards. That happened to one of my friends. He didn't actually ruin the sweeper cords. He only got through the rubber. Calmness. And don't feel bad if you mess up, because they'll give you more opportunities to practice. We're all human. It's going to happen. We'll mess up, but that's okay. They'll give you more practice. I actually had a principal who gave me that bit of advice one of my first years of teaching, and I still remember that. There was something I didn't deal with that he thought I should have, and he said, it's okay, I'll give you another opportunity. How about a 13-year-old girl who has the privilege of using a pen for English, and what does she do? Dark black mustache all over her upper lip. Ballpoint pen. When possible, deal with situations that come up as soon as possible. Work through them so that you can go back to positive interaction. However, I'm not superhuman, and I'm supposing you aren't either. And so sometimes we may need to just give ourselves a little space and just tell them, hey, we'll talk about it in a little bit. Because sometimes we need a little time to think about what the best thing is to do, or maybe you need to go talk to another co-teacher or the principal and get some advice. Grow thick skin. Don't take things personally. Remember, this is not about you. It's about things the child has experienced in their past. Now, I'm guessing for the most part, we probably don't have children actually yelling that they hate us. That's probably more things that would show up at home in the family. Maybe you do. I don't know. Do you have any children who lose control enough that they yell? Okay, so you have a few that do? Mm-hmm. It does happen. I have never personally had to deal with it at school to that extent, but I have definitely seen it. So it's easy to take that personally. It doesn't feel good when a child yells at you. And sometimes we tell ourselves it's because of trauma, but in here we just feel really bad, right? It's just hard to separate that. Maybe the child is comparing you to last year's teacher and making last year sound wonderful and glorious and amazing, and like gives you the feeling like you're just not doing it quite right. Don't take it personally. Well, that's interesting. This year, it's a new year, and we're doing it this way. Now, it's not bad to incorporate their ideas, but it's best perhaps not to incorporate their ideas at the moment, because then they feel like they're in control. Or maybe tell them, hey, that is a good idea. Maybe sometime. And tuck it away. Don't let yourself feel threatened by parents. Oh, I'm giving you a sneak peek. Parents can children have a lot of insight for us. And sometimes they are at a loss for what to do themselves, but even talking with them and hearing what the child was struggling with before he went to bed the night before, if you have a close enough relationship the parents can share, that really gives you a window into what they could be dealing with at school. And that has helped me a lot. Communicate with parents. With some children that are very challenging, you might need to communicate about every day. Because the other thing that happens is children love to play parent against teacher and teacher against parent. They will probably tell you some crazy stories of things that happen at home. However, if you don't want the parents to believe all the crazy stories they tell about you, don't believe all the ones they tell about their parents. Get the information straight from the parents. Have a good working relationship. In fact, my one little boy, I don't even remember what the issue was that morning, but I just mentioned something about, is it because of such and such? And he said, who told you? Oh, you and my mom talk too much. Now I realize it's a hard job because you have all your other students in your room. You have your academics. You have a set of books that you're supposed to teach this year. Maybe go lighter on minor subjects the first couple weeks of school if you have a trauma child, and just work really hard on establishing routines and letting them know what you expect, watching them for signs of fear, watching where they get overwhelmed. Maybe you could just go a little easier on the academics for the first couple weeks. There will still be those busy, trying times, but maybe that could help a little bit. Build trust for good relationships. Relationship is all important. Relationships are what develop healthy neurotransmitters in the brain. And we talked a little bit about that in the last class. Because of hard experiences in the child's past, they may desperately want a relationship with you, but at the same time, they desperately fear it. What reason do they have to trust you? You're a new person in their life. How do they know? Persist in building a good relationship, even when the payback is long in coming. They will remember kindness. It comes through my nieces and nephews. They remember the teachers who were kind. And if you can connect with them on something they enjoy, it comes through the children. They enjoyed teachers who took an interest in what they were interested in. So even if you don't see the payback or hear the payback, kindness goes a long way. It speaks to them. Now, I would love to hear some ideas. What do you do for building a relationship with your students? Just some practical ideas of things we can do. Yes?
I had a child who was adopted, and she would try to get attention by telling stories of before she was adopted.
Mm-hmm.
She was 5 or so. And she was trying to get attention and trying to get people to feel sorry for her. And so every time she told stories like that, I would just stop and take a moment to care about the story. That hurt. I'm sorry.
Mm-hmm.
That was painful. And then I'd try to, you know, find a way to move forward.
Uh-huh.
And she's 2 grades past me now, and she still keeps coming back to me and tells me things. Like she, mm-hmm. you know, she felt the care.
She remembered.
Yeah.
That's good. Very good. To recognize her story. Share in that where you can. What else?
It takes time, but like writing them each personally a note, I know that has mm-hmm. been a lot to my students. You take the time to write a note just specifically for them,
mm-hmm.
or something you see about them, or something.
Good. And maybe that could be a way to reach withdrawn students who you find it hard to communicate with. Good. What else? Sometimes the best ways are some of the simplest ways.
Mm-hmm. Lots of words of affirmation, and
mm-hmm.
depending on the student and where they're at, like I know that they love hugs,
mm-hmm.
like all, like you know, g- give him a hug every day.
Mm-hmm.
Still, even like during the summer, I see him at church, and the one little boy, he doesn't talk. He mm-hmm. has a really hard time with his talking, but he'll come up and give me a big hug like mm-hmm. every Sunday.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah,
that's powerful.
Yeah,
safe touch. Good. Anything else?
So, I'm a foster dad.
Uh-huh.
And we've had 20-some children,
mm-hmm.
Foster children we've adopted. We've had 20-some teenagers separate from foster children.
Mm-hmm.
Most of them are troubled teenagers living with us. And, of course, I teach.
Mm-hmm.
And as a foster dad, as foster parents, we have to keep up with the current training that's
mm-hmm.
going on. So
mm-hmm.
Something that has been a little frustrating for me is that a lot of what you hear, what you should do, changes a lot.
Mm-hmm.
The whole psychology.
Mm-hmm.
And so I would like to put the word out that as you read, a lot mm-hmm. of the books that you read,
mm-hmm.
There's always a lot of good there, but there's also things there that you should take that psychologists, for example, will tell you now that actually was not really a good idea.
Right.
That actually mm-hmm. was not really the way that mm-hmm. we should have been looking at things. So I'd like to put out a word of caution, but to answer the question how to build relationships,
mm-hmm.
So with the troubled teenagers or with foster children, one of the things that they crave most of all is normalcy.
Mm-hmm.
Just to be normal.
Mm-hmm.
And if you look at this list, I sort of had a chuckle, but if you look at this list of how do we build trust, observe, provide structure, provide nurture, use non-threatening voice, tone, body language, posture, use simple language, don't just assume, don't be surprised at anything, grow thick skin, that's a really good one, build trust through good relationships. Every one of those applies for every child on the face of this
mm-hmm.
earth.
Mm-hmm.
So, with most, if not all, of our foster children, normalcy in using all of these things,
mm-hmm.
It works for foster children, it works for our children.
Mm-hmm.
So what I guess if I could bring this all together, I would say that one of the things that often I think that has, at least early on for me, and maybe even now, kept me from being effective with a child who has been through a lot of trauma
mm-hmm.
is looking at them as in you're different.
Mm-hmm.
Looking at them as you're damaged.
Mm-hmm.
And that sounds pretty strong,
mm-hmm.
maybe, but we don't consciously think those thoughts,
mm-hmm.
but we think them
mm-hmm.
subconsciously. And so look at whatever, whoever your child is, as being, he's a child, as like any other child, I need to treat him with respect, provide structure, and
mm-hmm.
those things. We have a son who is ADHD.
Mm-hmm.
He's not on any meds. But what we have done, he used to bounce off the walls when he was younger.
Mm-hmm.
Interestingly enough, what if we look at all of these things, this list,
mm-hmm.
we have intentionally tried to be very conscious of treating him this way as well,
mm-hmm.
and then also his misbehavior, trying to be consistent in sitting down and talking with it in a productive way.
Mm-hmm.
Because here's the thing, is he'll do things without thinking.
Mm-hmm.
He won't know what he really did sometimes. But as we have done that, just taking the time to talk with him about
mm-hmm.
it, point it out, and there were consequences, eventually
mm-hmm.
he would come to remember. So, but here's the thing that's interesting. The same thing in a child who has ADHD that causes them to act out like that is the same thing that causes a trauma a child who's been through trauma mm-hmm. to also do the same sort of mm-hmm. similar behaviors. You have an amygdala that is running the show.
Right. Mm-hmm.
And so I would like to, I guess I'd like to throw out the thought that with these children, normalcy, looking at them as a child and not as damaged, not as different, providing as much normalcy as you can, mm-hmm. just, that really helps. And so as you do those things, you don't have to think so much about building the relationship. It will happen.
Mm-hmm.
Does that make sense?
Yeah. Would intentional be a key word, maybe?
Yeah.
Like, be intentional about...
Yeah, but you should do that with any children.
Right, exactly. I think in the midst of bad behavior, it's easy for us to forget. Or maybe we get kind of frozen about what to do.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so we had one boy... He would just, you know, total temper tantrum and just, he'd throw things, I mean, anything
mm-hmm.
In the house. And it shocked him that I was shocked.
Yeah.
Because it always worked for adults before.
Yeah, right. Yeah.
But I said, well, look, we're going to have to go to your bedroom.
Uh-huh.
If you're going to throw things, we got to do it in there. We can't do it uh-huh. up here. And because, you know, there's not a whole lot I could do, but we could do that, so we, you know. Uh-huh. You have to press in a little bit, but mm-hmm. but don't do it in a threatening sort of way.
Mm-hmm. Right. Yeah. Thank you for that, and thank you for the word of caution about how things change. And we always want to balance what we're doing with biblical principles.
Mm-hmm.
Make sure we're not straying from that. Make sure we're working within that framework. So yes, thank you very much. Anything else? Yes.
I have a question. It's not a tip, so maybe I shouldn't ask this right now, but it's on my mind.
Yeah.
So I had a child last year, and her parents were very strict that I require of her what I require of all the other students.
Mm-hmm.
And so today I'm thinking that, okay, maybe we required more than what she was capable of, and that was a problem. She didn't feel safe.
Mm-hmm.
So my question is, where is the balance between making her feel normal, like mm-hmm. all the rest of the kids, and not requiring too much of what she's capable of?
Mm-hmm.
Like, I was never sure if she was manipulating me or if uh-huh. it was, you know, like a problem. She didn't act out like normal kids. She was the sweetest kid you would ever meet.
Uh-huh.
Like, everything was a ploy to get attention. Like, uh-huh. good attention, bad attention, didn't matter.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So I was never sure of, it's frustrating because I feel like I didn't do what I should have done last year. And you know, what I should have done, should have I treated her, should have I expected more or less?
Mm-hmm. And there's about, it's hard to know that the balance is sometimes really tricky. Any input from you as a class on that question? Was it academic areas or more social behavior?
She was an academic genius. It was social behavior.
Social.
So, like, delayed obedience is a huge thing.
Uh-huh.
And so, you know, once she actually obeyed me, you know, relatively mm-hmm. quickly, I felt like it was a win when her parents were like, well, if she's not obeying instantaneously, you know, then it's not good enough. Like, it's got to be better.
You want to work them towards the...
Yeah.
I always said, when I taught the Downs especially, I always said, the more normally you treat them, the more normally they will act.
Mm-hmm.
But some of them need more teaching to get to that spot.
Mm-hmm. The thing that you said with the way you treated your Downs,
mm-hmm.
Sue, that also works with FASD
mm-hmm.
Very well.
Mm-hmm.
You can, you talked about brain resilience or plasticity
mm-hmm.
in FASD, fetal alcohol syndrome,
mm-hmm.
is that's one of the only substance abuse situations where the brain does not really, there's not a lot of plasticity for
mm-hmm.
FASD. Drugs,
mm-hmm.
you know, medical drugs, opioids,
mm-hmm.
All those other things, a child can regain pretty much a
mm-hmm.
normal brain function.
Mm-hmm.
But that works, what you've described.
Treating them as normally as possible. Mm-hmm.
So question on, for the teacher with that student, so delayed delayed obedience, like how, if you compared it to the rest of her classmates, did she obey more or less quickly than anybody else in the classroom?
Oh yeah, she was definitely like, she would obey less quickly than anybody else.
Oh, okay, yeah.
By far.
Yeah. So, my experience would be that there, you are not going to you're not going to hurt her by pushing in and requiring her to be obedient. However, the thing is that it has to be done, and you know, you use these principles.
Mm-hmm.
There is actually a lot of security. So first of all, one of the reasons why a child may not obey is to find out where the boundaries are. In it has a lot to do with security.
Mm-hmm.
But if they know that you expect them to obey promptly,
mm-hmm.
I don't really like the word instantaneously, but the prompt obedience,
mm-hmm.
There will be a lot of security
mm-hmm.
for that. And something that has helped us a lot is to stop looking at children as a foster child.
Mm-hmm.
It's an adopted child. And I'll just, I'm just going to put this out. This is one of my frustrations. How many times do you hear people discussing a certain child's behavior, and then somebody will say, well, he's adopted?
Mm-hmm.
You all know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
And I think that is part of the problem that we have, is that we are not receiving. So as a dad,
mm-hmm.
We have to, if we have adopted a child, we have to, that is my child.
Mm-hmm.
And it's not, I am treated, there is no difference.
Mm-hmm.
Does
right.
that, does it make sense?
Mm-hmm.
And as teachers
yeah.
in the classroom, I think we can do that the same way.
Mm-hmm.
I'm going to have a student who's adopted,
mm-hmm.
going to grade 7 this year, and there are some behavior issues with him, but guess what? My son acts the same way. There are at least 3 or 4 other boys in the same class who have exactly the same behaviors,
mm-hmm.
and yet there are people who would say, "Well, he's adopted."
Mm-hmm.
And I've thought about that in the last year, and said, I'm becoming more and more convinced that that is part of the problem.
Mm-hmm. Again, with understanding, but not with making them the exception to the rule, perhaps.
Right, because we use
right.
it as a cop-out. So.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, not as a cop-out, no. But as an understanding, maybe, where they came from. And
right.
And it helps me, just because I grew up the youngest in the family, and so, yeah, all this... What shocked me as a teacher? And so, yeah, it helps the understanding for me, just to understand a little bit what their background is, what they went through. Yes.
These are such complex questions. Like you said, sometimes there's a lot of ditch and very little road in the center.
Yeah.
I think we find 2 categories of parents and teachers. We have the side of which we want our child to be so normal. Just treat them normal.
Mm-hmm.
And there's... That's sometimes too narrow
mm-hmm.
of a view
mm-hmm.
for the problems. In case that I'm a little bit involved in, it's a different school, but you know, as I heard the parents, he's normal, just going to treat him normal.
Mm-hmm.
Last year, talking to the school, he can't keep the first grader in school, it's suspended.
Mm-hmm.
Well, it's just normal. Well, now, okay, so that's the extreme. The other side
mm-hmm.
is other parents want them to be treated with kids' gloves because they're
mm-hmm.
so special.
Mm-hmm.
That's the other side. And
mm-hmm.
so, wow. Every child's different as well.
Right.
I think sometimes trying to create categories of issues.
Mm-hmm.
There's moral categories, and there's other categories. And to somehow, the obedience, the line, to put those in one category,
mm-hmm.
the silliness, the hyperactivity,
mm-hmm.
the endless restlessness, that's in a different category.
Mm-hmm.
And so maybe that's one way of trying to help think through it.
Mm-hmm.
Well, let's put this into some groups. I mean,
mm-hmm.
I work with some very hyperactive children as well in our school, and I try to say, well, you know what? Did it matter the silliness, the goofiness, the lack of attention? You have to decide where to put the weight.
Mm-hmm.
these issues there are moral consequences. They're character issues.
Right.
But even in those, I think it takes maybe extra grace. But mm-hmm. the call is still the same.
Mm-hmm.
To move that that child's heart toward accountability.
Yes.
But you might handle his dishonesty different than another child in mm-hmm. terms of how you process and help him think and process through. Mm-hmm. But the end call and goal
is accountability
mm-hmm. and growth. Mm-hmm.
Yes. And I like the thing of children do want an authority strong enough to require obedience of them and carry mm-hmm. through with it. Like some of that pushing lines is to see if you are strong enough to be trustworthy. So that can come into play too. Thank you for your input. I appreciate it. Yes.
On what this Mr. Hugh was saying this afternoon. I remember sitting in, I think it was a workshop, and the guy said, he said, you can treat kids equally, but that may not always be fair, depending on who's looking on. Mm-hmm. So in my class, I have very intelligent students and I have slower ones.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, the one that's very intelligent might say, Miss, you're not giving me enough time. Well, I'm treating you equal because mm-hmm. the one that's slower requires a lot more of my attention.
Mm-hmm.
You don't really. So it's equal, and it may not always look fair to you, mm-hmm. but it's equal.
Mm-hmm.
And just being consistent with that, like in our classrooms, in our homes where we are, like, mm-hmm. All our kids require consistency. Like,
mm-hmm.
they need that.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
And in my first year of teaching that, my principal pounded that into me. And, you know, in the moment, it's like, well, you keep saying this, but, you know, it's true. Like, they need consistency,
right.
like, all the time.
Right.
It helps them.
Right.
Whether you think they're slower or they require more or not, like, they need that consistency. I can't not treat you the same. Like,
mm-hmm.
So that's good. But you can
yeah.
be equal. And that may not always look fair.
Right. Thank you. Verbal affirmation. Sincere affection. Heartfelt praise. Human attention. Eye contact. Those simple things are the things that mean the most to a child. Greatest rewards. So instead of using those 3 extra minutes between classes to look at your WhatsApp, go put your hand on a child's shoulder, look them in the eye, and say, I really like how neatly you're writing today. Human attention speaks worlds. And dopamine is released with human relationship. And that's the hormone that allows us to feel joy and pleasure. And that can happen at 90 years of age. New synapses can be formed in the brain. I find that fascinating. See bad behaviors through eyes of compassion. I think it's good for us to look at what could be happening inside. What is, I've really enjoyed the thrust of normalcy and consistency. That is super important. But for me, I can tend to look at a child and pass a judgment and want to keep moving. Like, that's more of my personality. And it is so good for me to try to think, what is the child going through right now? Is there inner turmoil? Are they working through the question of why their birth parents didn't want them? And if you keep in touch with the parents and have a good relationship with them, they can help in some of those things. And then you can understand with them and empathize with them. Understand them and empathize. Also, good for me to remember that anger almost always is a secondary emotion. It is covering fear or pain. The most violent children are often the most tender-hearted ones. They needed to be protected when they were tiny and nobody was there. If a child is suddenly having bad days at school, check in with the parents. I know I'm saying this a lot about working with the parents, but I feel like it's super important. They might be able to give you some clues. Likely they're experiencing the same thing at home. Is your child reactive to things that don't make sense? Could it be their brain is associating this something that happened with a memory from the past? Can we help the child understand that this is something that happened in the past and it's not something about the moment? Can we help them through it, talk them through it? Bad behavior may be the result of a dysregulated brain. and some of the most infuriating behaviors are meltdowns. The child loses it, and you can't reason with them. And it takes them a while to calm down and get through the meltdown. They flip to the bottom part of their brain. They flip to, anybody from the other class remember the three survival responses?
Fight, flight, or freeze.
Thank you. Fight, flight, or freeze. And children melt down when they cannot calm themselves, which is a function of the upper part of the brain. As a baby, parents come for their child. They calm their small children, and through this care and nurture, a child learns to calm themselves. And that helps them to regulate their behavior. Now, for a child who has had nobody to help them calm down, nobody to come in those scary times, they haven't learned to calm themselves yet. And so they need you to be there to help them, to show them how to calm down. And eventually they do develop the capacity to calm themselves in time of stress.
Can I interject something right here?
Sure.
So while I did, you know, push up or put out the idea that normalcy is what a child wants, that what you said right now is very true, that if a child has not learned how to calm down by himself, how can you treat that child as close to as he's treating him as a normal, but yet he isn't?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and so there's always that tension.
Yeah, right.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah.
I want to clarify or put that out there.
Mm-hmm.
You can't always treat them as if they were normal.
You have to meet them where they are. The end
right.
goal, like Anthony said, the end goal is to take them to the same place as everybody else. But sometimes that looks a little different, the process of getting there. And I know for myself, so often I just want to stop the behavior. I just want to fix it now because it's easier that way. If we can find something to just fix them. However, we won't work miracles overnight. Little by little, just keep working on it. Keep teaching. So take home thought. Remember that behavior that may seem so strong and threatening to me as a teacher probably portrays a very fragile, sensitive child inside. And it's true. I know a child like that. It's very angry. But the child is very sensitive. And that's the kind of things you see when you live with them that help you to understand how this can be. So back to the thought that repeated positive experiences create new brain connections. Read a little story out of The Connected Child. 6-year-old Janie didn't have much of an appetite during the day at school, but later, when her ADHD drugs wore off, she became ravenous. One evening she asked, "Mommy, I'm hungry. Could I have a snack bar?" Busy in the kitchen preparing a large meal for the family, her mother replied, "No, sweetheart. In 10 minutes, we're going to eat the chicken and vegetables I'm fixing for supper." Janie exploded into tears and began shrieking, "I hate you! I hate you! You are so mean! You never let me have anything!" The little girl ran into her bedroom, slammed the door, and began to sob loudly. Terrified, Janie's bewildered and disappointed mom couldn't imagine what had triggered the outburst. Deep fear caused Janie to explode into tears when she was denied the snack bar. To the little girl who spent a painfully hungry year in an orphanage, the promise of dinner in 10 minutes was no real comfort. She remembered going to bed hungry every night after orphanage workers ignored her pleas for food. Even though Janie's mom understood that good food was coming shortly, and her daughter was in no real danger of starving, the traumatized primitive part of Janie's brain just couldn't grasp that. Starvation is encoded in her deepest memory. When refused a snack bar, Janie panicked, fearing she would die of starvation. Janie's mother had responded in a way that provided felt safety, without spoiling her daughter's appetite for a home-cooked meal. Here's how. "Mommy, I'm hungry. Can I have a snack bar?" "Yes, dear. You may have a snack bar, and you may eat it right after supper." Mother puts the bar into her daughter's hands. "Do you want to put it beside your plate on the dinner table, or keep it in your pocket until dinner is over?" This simple act would reassure Janie that she won't go hungry. She still isn't permitted to eat until dinner time. But now she can touch the food and know it's hers. Deciding whether to put the bowl on the table or keep it with her helps Janie feel more comfortable and lets her practice self-control. Small choices are comforting to a traumatized child and build trust. Communicate to the child that you believe in them. And even in times when you feel it hard to feel love towards them, maybe it's a difficult spell, it's okay. Just be kind anyway. God's grace will see you through. Be playful, actively engaging the children in learning. Playfulness signals safety to the child and disarms fear. Playfulness is very powerful. And I'm just going to give you a few examples of playfulness in the classroom, and then I would love to hear a few ideas from you. But I see my time is running out, so maybe we'll have to skip over that. What about teaching behavior using puppets? Modeling behavior for them. So we have two puppets, and this one says, "Get out of my way!" How do you say that using good words? Excuse me, please? Sure. You're modeling good behavior in a fun way. That's one way you could do it. How about for younger children? Give them a stuffed animal to hold while they're doing a certain assignment. And if the child has trouble sticking at it, and they're holding their stuffed animal, you can say, "Mr. Tiger, you need to get busy on your work." They know who wasn't staying busy on their work. But it's an unconfrontational way to get the point across. Another way to keep things, you're teaching, but it's in a playful way. Use stories, your own stories, stories from books, imaginative stories. I had another friend who had a little boy that had a hard time staying motivated on math facts. And so she drew a little house on fire at the bottom of his paper, and she told him, "If you don't hurry up and get your math paper done, that house is going to burn up before you get there." It worked. Be an effective leader. A balance of calmness and patience mixed with confidence. Calmness creates a safe, relaxed atmosphere. However, they also feel safe when a confident adult is in charge. And if you say something, please carry it out. How can they trust you if you don't carry out what you say? So stick to your word. And for some of us, that means learning to think twice before we say something. Like if we say it, we have to be willing to carry it through. Give choices. Children love choices, but keep it simple. Give them two choices. Maybe you're going to let them use colored pencils to underline your answers today. Do you want the red one or the blue one? Simple choices. What happens to a child when they feel genuinely safe? And to me, this is the most exciting slide. I love this one. The survival part of his brain stops being so super vigilant. Going back to talking about what's happening in the brain, you disarm the fear that is controlling their actions. The child relaxes, and trust begins to grow and blossom, which allows the child to access higher regions of the brain, allowing for growth in areas such as reasoning and logic. It shows a progression of healing in the child's brain. So, how should we handle bad behavior? What should we do? And I would like to look, first of all, at our attitude. Bad behavior is very inconvenient, yes. But it is also a teaching opportunity. You get to show this child a different way, a better way. You get to light their path. And whenever possible, connect with the child and then correct. and sometimes they're being hurtful or destructive. And if they're hurting somebody else or being too destructive, sometimes you have to stop them immediately. But when possible, get down on the child's level. Hold the child's hands if it's a young child. Or put your hand on their shoulder. Make eye contact. And for some children who aren't comfortable with eye contact, it might be brief at first. But require at least a little bit of eye contact. Just a light touch under their chin. With the goal of longer eye contact. They must see in your eyes that you are not angry with them. Eye contact is powerful. And I told a story about a girl who hit the freeze mood in my classroom. And when I took her back, that brief eye contact where her eyes met mine, I was holding her, that's when she broke. Eye contact. And I really like, somebody here talked about recognizing their story, validating their feelings. Okay, here's your math paper for today. You may get started. And I think that's so important to validate the child's feelings. And try to understand, but then lead them on. How are you feeling?
Mad.
Mad? Mm-hmm. It is a hard lesson, isn't it? We just learned this today. Yeah, I understand. Do you know what you should do when you grow up?
You should raise your hand.
Now, I might be busy. I might not be able to come right away, but as soon as I can, I will come. And then I'll help you. So we're going to try again, okay? You raise your hand, and you're going to say, can you help me? So what are you going to do? What's your part of the deal? And what am I going to do? Yeah, I'm helping. That's right. It's a good way to get what you need. And practice, practice, practice. There's your math lesson for today. And practice is so important. Trying to reinforce good behaviors. Yes, can you help me? Good job using words. And that looks different with every teacher, but practicing, doing a redo, and give them good words. They need to be taught to use good words to get what they need. Give them a voice. Try to understand their feelings, but then lead them on to the next step. And always end on a good note. Praise them for using their words. Praise them for being strong enough. Strength is a big deal with them sometimes. Praise them for being strong enough to do what you ask them to do. And we have theirs on the handout. What should we do if a child refuses to follow a command? And this might happen. What are you going to do? Tell them clearly and simply what you expect of them. Give them a think it over spot. If possible, keep them close by. Ideally within 10 or 12 feet. Sending a trauma child out of the room can give them a message that I don't want you. However, depending on the dynamics of your classroom, you might have to give them a spot that is not visible to the other children. Or maybe it's a spot just outside your classroom that you are within hearing them. So a safe spot, hopefully close by if possible. Tell them what you expect of them. Tell them to say ready when they are ready to obey. And once the child says ready, praise them. They're using words to communicate, and that's a good thing. And use those tips for connecting with them. Hold their hands. Look them in the eyes. And do those things that connect with them in the midst of correcting. When he is ready, take him back to the exact spot where he acted up. Because you A person has body memory. So take them back to the exact spot, the scene of the crime, and get them to do what you ask them to do. It'll stick better. It's the same spot. And have them do what you asked them to do in the first place. If the child hurt someone else, or took something, make them fix it back up. Restitution. As many doors as a child goes through to get into trouble, make them come back through those doors. It's part of learning. You messed this up, now you need to clean it up. And this is a story from one of my friends, a little boy she taught. And he had recently come into a foster home. So many of these things were new to him. And he would get angry about simple commands. And so he had a blowout. I don't remember what it was about, but he went out of control. The other students were either out at recess or else they got an impromptu recess. I'm not sure which. And so my friend left the room. She shut the door and left the room to get the principal, because he would throw things when he got angry. And as they were coming back together, they peeked in the window of the door before they actually went in. And there was this little boy just rocking his desk back and forth. And she said, he's going to push it over. And sure enough, he managed. Little second grader, he managed to push his desk over. And then he started picking up his things and throwing them around the room. That's where they entered, and he did respect the principal enough to stop. So they worked through the issue, and then it was time to clean up. It's time to go back through the doors. Okay, so you put everything back in your desk, and he started picking his stuff back and meekly putting it in. And she didn't even know if he had everything in his desk or not. So she asked him, is there anything else? And he placed the corner for them. And she said, you put something in there? No, they're up on the top. She said, what's up on top? The pencil creams. She said, how are you going to get them down? I guess I need a chair. He pushes a chair over. It reaches way up, just so reach. And sure enough, there are pencil crayons up there. And got everything back in his desk. Give consequences when needed. And that's going to depend by students and where you are on the journey, where you are with working with them. There's no cut and dried answers. But I feel it's very important to be consistent. I think more important than giving exactly the right consequence is to be consistent. Consistently work on wrong behavior. It might be asking for a redo. Maybe they say something in a disrespectful tone of voice and you say, could you please say that again with respect? And they might redo it and you move on. Maybe you need to practice with them. Sometimes you may need to give other consequences. But I believe that will come with working with them, learning to know them, we'll be able to. Hopefully, there'll still be those times where, what do I do? Hopefully, the longer you work with them, the more you'll understand their needs and be able to discern when they need more teaching or when the behavior is willful and needs consequences. And remember, 1, 2, 3 steps forward, 1, 2 backwards, 1, 2, 3 steps forward, 1, 2 backwards. Did I get anywhere? Yeah, I got somewhere. It's still progress. Still heading in the right direction. Still improvement, even though it's slow. And always end on a good note. We talked about that in the last point. And once you work through an issue, it's done. Go back to playful, positive interaction. Withdrawing relationships is like pouring Clorox on their hearts. I had one, disrespect is never okay. I have a few points on that. I'm not going to get over them. And I also have a few other ideas of things that could be factors in a child who is really struggling with behavior, things to consider. I don't have time to go over those, but they're on your handout. You can read through that. And I brought some books that I enjoyed reading. I have them on your handout, so I don't know. Sometimes I came to Teacher's Week, and I was like, I'm going to get 3 books that are recommended on Amazon this year. So if you're one of those people who's going to buy 3 books that were recommended this year, here's some of mine that I enjoyed. feel free to look through them if you care to. And I included a list of 40 tips that I collected from other teachers. Maybe it's something you can read over and pull something out 3 months into the school year, and something that can help you out. And I'm just going to click through here so that I can get to my last slide. Recommended reading. I'm going to go over that a little bit. Children with disabilities are like butterflies with a broken wing. They're just as beautiful as all others. They just need help to spread their wings. So God bless you. Thank you for coming, and I wish you a wonderful school year. I'm going to venture to guess that the child you put the most time and energy into is the one you're going to miss the most, even if he calls you the most prudent.
This recording and many others are available through Christian Learning Resource, the campus bookstore at Faith Builders. Order online at www.christianlearning.org or call 877-222-4769.